Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Well, you know, I'm just back from Hawaii, right? My Hawaiian trip. And I imagine you're just going to sit back and smoke a bunt while I talk about my Hawaiian trip. But I got to tell you, it was kind of weird because the couple I was with, they're pretty cool. And, you know, we got drunk on the beach and we started talking about, like, you know, wow, what are your top 10 sexual positions? And I got to tell you, after the two that I knew, I just started naming Marvel villains. It worked really well.
Except when Chris smacked you across the face.
Well, I didn't know if you heard her pounding on the ceiling. I think she heard that joke. But anyway.
Smoking a blunt. Joe, marijuana is still illegal here in Minnesota, and I would not partake.
Only if you're dumb enough to get caught.
I would not partake in an illegal substance because I don't trust the people who sell them. I dated a woman once who smoked a lot of weed. And by a lot of weed, I mean Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers levels of weed. And there was one time where we had to drive out for her to pick some up. And we drove out to the middle of nowhere to a guy who, I swear I am not making this up, had a bathtub in his front yard. And all I could think is, there is absolutely no way on this planet I would ever put anything from this person into my body, even if he was growing tomatoes and I wanted them on my salad.
Tomato!
Not at all. Once it's legal, I have no problem with it. But it's not the fact that it's illegal. It's the fact that the people who sell illegal stuff are not trustworthy.
At least not till it's legalized.
That's why I like comic books. They're legal, and the creepy people sell them to you to abide by the law.
Well, not all. I mean, I met some pretty cool people when I was in Hawaii.
Yeah. You said that there are four, count them, four, one, two, three, four, a quad of comic shops there.
Well, there's actually a few more.
How many did your lovely wife allow you to go to?
That's ahead of the story. Because I have a long story about my entire trip.
Oh,
but
good.
I figured take a nap. What I would do is, it rather than bore everybody, because if you were following me on Facebook, you understood just how much fun I was having. But I figured I would just deal with mostly the comic book related stuff, because there were some tie-ins that I didn't quite realize until I got there. The first one being, of course, we took the direct Delta flight from Minneapolis to Honolulu. And, you know, getting through security was a breeze, mainly because I'm pre-checked. No one else was. We even flew over Dana's house. Not that, you know, she would come out and wave to us as we flew over Reno, but.
Did you flush over her house so that she got hit by the blue snow?
I told her it was an icy.
Ah,
so
okay.
Blueberry. And it was chocolate chunks. But that's neither here nor there. What I did do is I discovered, first of all, I don't sleep on planes. I never have. If I'm really, really tired, like I remember once when I was on the road and it was an early icy morning, and as the plane taxied to get de-iced, I fell asleep. And then 20 minutes later, I woke up and realized we haven't been de-iced yet. Well, most of the time what I would do is, and this tells you how old I am, kid, boys and girls, I used to listen to my MP3 players and just put in music and just let the music go. Well, MP3 players have gone the way of the dodo. I don't really want to fill my phone full of MP3s because I have it filled with all my, you know, witty Facebook downloads and memes and stuff. But what most of the jets have now is they have the TV screen in front of you. And Delta has this thing where they have all these different movies, games, you can listen to music. So I looked through the movies, and on the way down, I actually watched two movies I hadn't watched before. I actually watched three, but for the life of me, I can't remember the third one. The first one was The Eternals. I figured as long as they're offering it, I would go ahead and watch it. I enjoyed the heck out of the movie. Have you seen it, Corey?
I have not. I have not had much time the last couple of weeks.
Now, the reason why, I'm not talking about time, because I figured you'll tell us about that when we get to Geeking and Freaking. I even talked with Turbo today. He said, oh, how could you like that thing? I said, I think I liked it because everybody else hated it. If I had gone into it not knowing how much people disliked it, because I just have this, I call it like the Butch switch. Somebody doesn't like it, I'm instantly going to go in and try to like it. Granted, it doesn't always work. Like when I rewatched, what was the last Batman that Schumacher did? Batman and Robin again, or Batman Forever?
Yeah, Batman and Robin.
Now, I distinctly recall loving it the first time there. But then again, I was with our good buddy Nick Post, who just has a way of making everything fun. Because when I watched it again, I was like, you know, I'm pretty sure I wasn't drinking then, because they didn't serve alcoholic beverages in theaters like they do now. That said, I enjoyed Eternals. Yes, it was long. It dragged. A lot of potential. I like the little nods they gave to the Marvel Universe. Like, why didn't you get involved when the Thanos thing? Because, well, that's not really our mission. And again, if for those of you who are in the spoilers, you know, you probably want to just put your fingers in yours. But the after scene credits were good. They introduced Star Fox, the long lost Titan, brother of Thanos, and all of them. Brother of Thanos, which sort of ties into what's going on in the Eternals series, where they say, well, yeah, Thanos is a Titan, and Titans were part of the Eternal line. They just kind of branched off. So just kind of, that was kind of fun. I enjoyed the movie. And again, probably more because what was I going to do at 30,000 feet in a pressurized tube going 600 miles an hour for 9 hours? So I thought that was good. And then I watched, and of course, I always called him Shang-Chi, but now I guess, how do we call him?
Shang-Chi.
Just like it was Dark Seed, not Dark Side. Anyways, I watched that because that was on there as well. And I enjoyed the heck out of that. I mean, more so than the Eternals, because it started rolling and it just kept rolling. Have you seen this one yet, Corey?
No, I have not.
Okay, same thing. It ties in to the Marvel Universe a little quicker. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I'm not going to give too much away, you know, because, you know, I know it's an old movie and you probably read a lot about it, but it was fun. Both of them I enjoyed greatly. Again, I had time to watch a third one. It must have been like Grease or something, because it just, you know, oh, okay, watch this. So when the flight ended, I didn't have to worry about it. My friends started watching the Eternals, and I don't think they got to the end of it, but they didn't get to the final credit scenes. I just told them, okay, fast forward through this and then stop. And so they caught the first end credit scene, and then there's the one way, way, way at the end. And same thing with Shang-Chi, or Chi, whatever. He knows what he knows his name. So that kept the flight interesting. When we got there, anytime you take a long flight like this, the first day, don't plan anything, because you're going to need that to veg. And basically, we stayed at the Hilton Waikiki, which is way expensive. Everything there was way expensive. Everything on Waikiki is way expensive. But we were there nonetheless, and we ate, we drank, we ate. Did I mention we drank? So the first day we just kind of vegged. Second day was Saturday, so we went out and we went to the Aloha Flea Market, which is around Aloha Stadium. Only found a couple guys with comics. One guy had a really good run of John Carter. Another guy had a run of Crawl. And again, if I had the room to bring this stuff home, I might have bought it, but it wasn't as robust as when I remember it from 10 years ago, where when I went, you know, for NDF. Were we podcasting then?
I don't think so. I don't think we podcasted when you were in Hawaii.
Okay. Well, when did we start podcasting?
2010.
Okay, maybe. I'd have to go back, because if we were podcasting, I don't remember. Because I know we started and I went to Alaska right away.
Yes.
Oh, well. Well, one of our listeners
is still going
through the old stuff, you know, and telling us stuff. So if you're out there listening, talk to us. Because, you know, that was more robust. I'd be walking and one of my friends would say, hey, there's comic. Where's Ryder? We got comics up here. Oh, wait, I'm looking at comics over here. I didn't see the big pog thing, but I did see the pop-up grip. So they were $5 a piece, and they were basically heavy-duty pog things. So they're still trying to make a comeback. The other thing that was fun was I went to 7-Eleven, and they had a thing called It's It, some type of San Francisco traditional mint bar. That was I didn't try it because, you know, high carb and all that. But they did have a lot of spam. They had spam musubi, deluxe spam musubi, and then and this was all at the 7-Eleven. So I was like, hey, this is cool. Teriyaki spam musubi. I did buy some to try, but we had a weird working fridge in our hotel and it froze everything solid. And I thought, well, okay, that's fine. I could always. And then one day we came in and the thing was dead and everything had thawed. And I go, okay, even I don't eat frozen thawed spam. I do have some standards. So that was fun. The next day we took a trick. And if I can find.
Took a trick?
We did. And the weird thing is when I take pictures of stuff, I always take pictures of where we went after we leave it. So I always got to go. This is called the Waima Valley. It's a botanical garden. And the big thing is you walk in and you walk to waterfalls. They have everything. It was just beautiful. If you've ever been to a botanical garden, very peaceful. What was interesting, though, is that at this particular place, they actually filmed parts of The Inhuman, the miniseries.
Oh!
They filmed Jumanji. Welcome to the Jungle, the one with Dwayne Johnson, Jet Black, Kevin Hart, and Carrie Gillum. They filmed Lost. They had Journey 2, The Mysterious Island, which I never heard of, but The Rock is in it. George of the Jungle, the Brandon Fraser thing was there. Joel versus the Volcano. So that was kind of neat. I know there's other places on the island, like when you go to Diamond Head and go right in or out, that's kind of the entrance they filmed to Jurassic Park. And there's a ranch elsewhere on the island where you can go and tour and take horseback tours or ATV tours where they toured a lot of the different things. Pat Gruber had gone on it and he enjoyed it. We decided not to because halfway through the day, well, as we got towards the end of the 10 days we were there, we were getting kind of burnt out. A lot of times we would start hiking and there was one hike we took. We didn't do the Diamond Head hike. But we went up to this other lookout point. I'm trying to find the sign. I think it's the Kauai shoreline in it's the state scenic shoreline. A wide paved path going up to a gorgeous lookout point. Whereas when you do Diamond Head, it's kind of on old World War II trails that are uneven and a lot of people there. And whereas this one didn't have as many people. But I swear, walking up this thing, I was in the desert Southwest. It was like 90 degrees. We're running out of water. There's no shade. It was still fun and very pretty. Again, I post all these pictures on Facebook. So if you care to check it out, feel free to do it. I'm still trying to find the name of it. But you had asked if I had hit any comic shops.
Yes, I think that was about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we went to a luau, which was fun. The food was okay. But what's fun is the shows. And all the show deals with Polynesian culture and it tells stories and things like that. So that's kind of amazing to get drawn into that. So the day of the luau, and I think it was Tuesday, I was going to hop in the car and go visit. There were at least four comic stores listed. And there were maybe a couple more. Like, I think there was what's the name? Oh, there's a store in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Dragon something.
I've heard of it, but I can't remember the second name. So
all I can remember, to the Googles.
Oh, Dragon.
I got to say, while you're looking that up,
There's Dragon Walk, George and the Dragon. Ooh, George and the Dragon. I love that restaurant. Yeah. Lucky Dragon.
No, I'm thinking Comic Shop. Comic Shop game type thing. Dragon's Lair. I don't remember. All I remember is that there was one like that that was a limited part of a chain. I didn't get to them.
There's Red Dragon Games. No. Dragon Tower Games. Tower Games. Dragon Games.
Nope, not ringing a bell. Anyways, I just figured, you know what? I'm going to go check out some of these shops. You know, I had all these pictures ready to go, and then I had a momentary blip on the computer. One thing I did notice is I had brought a laptop with me. I don't think I'm ever bringing a laptop with me again, unless I think I'm going somewhere where there's no ready interwebs, because we never really looked at a single. I never turned my laptop on. We Googled everything we needed, including like comic shops. Let's see if I can find that one. Dragon's Lair Limited. Do we have Dragon's Lair here in the Twin Cities?
Let me look. Dragon's Lair. I know we have the Android Dungeon. No, wait, that's on The Simpsons. Dragon's Lair. All I'm getting is the game.
Yeah, maybe not.
Lair, Minneapolis. Dragon's Lair Performing Arts.
Nope. So maybe I'm thinking, it occurred to me that it was a chain. It might have been just a chain from somewhere else in my travels that I ran across. So anyways, back to my Google. I'm looking. So the first place I tried to go to was called Ideas, Music, and Comics. Let's see if I can find the. It's 670 Ahua. Sorry, AUAHI Street, H6 in Honolulu. It's a record store, but they have new and used CDs, Blu-rays, books, comics, games, whatever. I thought it'd be kind of fun. So I got there. The weird thing was the comic shop had only two parking spots assigned to it. Every store had their own parking spots assigned to it. And if you couldn't find a spot in the parking lot, you were expected to go out on the street. And they actually had a parking attendant there to, hey, where are you going? I'm trying to get to Idea Music. I think they're filming today. You're not going to find a parking spot. And the other thing weird is when I went onto the street, yeah, everything was metered, but it was all coined meter and cheap coins like nickels, dimes, quarters. I wasn't carrying any change with me. So I did not get to go in to visit Idea Music and Books. Sorry, guys. Maybe next time. I did stop in, though, one of the coolest stores I've ever been in called Other Realms Limited. It's 1130 North Nimitz Highway, C-140. It's actually, you got to kind of Google where it goes because it was like behind a Best Buy. You see the Best Buy as you're driving through. And the other thing weird about stores on the island is that none of them get to have big billboards. You have to keep them below certain levels. So it's like when you drove past a Walmart, oh, there's a Walmart on that building. There's no actual big sign or Sam's Club or whatever. So I went into the store, browsed through sets. I browsed through the new releases. I browsed through all sorts of things. And, you know, I was looking for some fun stuff that I could bring home that was, unique. And I found one thing the first trip. I stopped and I got a Usagi Yojimbo number one, a Other Realms Hawaiian cover that was signed by Stan. They came with a certificate of authenticity September 14, 2019. So I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to buy. That'll be my one book that'll be really cool that I'll go with. So naturally, that didn't happen because I found a Ghost in the Shell trade that they were discounting for $10. And I haven't read that years. And so I thought, well, for $10, that's pretty good. It was a $30 book. And if I start reading it and it sucks, you know what I do with it. So I picked up that and I started talking with the people there and just fantastic, friendly people. There's one guy, I wish I could remember his name. He kind of reminds me of the atypical beach bum. And because, you know, I tell him, yeah, I'm from Minnesota. I just like to check out the comic shops. And he's like, oh, yeah, you like him, too. He was here 7 years ago. He ain't never left. I go, yep, I watched the plane go, and I'm just hanging here. I'm like, oh, that is so cool. And they asked me how I found them. And I said, well, I had basically looked on a Google map. And I figured I could hit like at least four of the stores. And then they kind of said, well, were you looking at like two stores that were up in Pearl City? And I go, yeah, that was kind of like the next one I was hoping to hit. And they're like, well, they're not there anymore. During the pandemic, they closed. One of them closed because the owner was older and didn't want to continue. And the other one, they just kind of. Yeah, you get that. You see that look on their eyes like, OK, there was something not right with that store. Like maybe it was mismanaged or whatever. And I thanked them and I said, well, I'm glad you said that because I'd go up and I'd look. But I had a time limit. I had to get back by 4 o'clock to get ready for the luau. So I picked up a couple other books. I picked up one called you probably heard of them. But have you ever heard of the Stan Lee Collectibles?
Yeah.
Yeah. There used to be StanleyCollectibles.com. They're not anymore. What the deal was, and the way I understand it, is that Stan Lee would tour. And when he came to your store, I don't think he went to Comic Cons, although he might have, he would have these exclusive covers and you could buy what you want, or your customers would come in and whoever. And I picked up a couple on my first trip. I picked up a Black Panther number one that had basically the Black Panther, and behind him is Stan with his thumb up. There's also a version where they're under an umbrella and Storm's on top of them making it rain, but they didn't have that one. I also picked up a J. Scott Campbell, or no, is this Jim Lee? Might be Jim Lee. I can't quite make out the signature. Oh, no, Campbell. There it is. Amazing Spider-Man, Renew Your Vows, number 5. Again, a Stan Lee exclusive. Funny enough, neither of these were on eBay when I got home. And they were a little pricey, but I was like, you know what? I just bought my wife like a $400 piece of jewelry. So I ended up buying like these two with cash, and then the other two I just paid for a credit card. And then they had one thing that caught my eye. And I was like, I may have to come back for that. And I told him, I said, if you guys come in one day and that book is gone, you know I came back and got it. And he said, well, cool. It was good to meet you, blah, blah, blah. So I went back to the hotel. The luau was good, like I talked about. And then then afterwards, my wife was like, well, why don't you go back and buy it? And I'm like, oh. So I had to figure out when I could go back and get it. Now, the next day, we went to Pearl Harbor. And Pearl Harbor consists of just, I mean, a very somber place. They had the USS Missouri up on display, which was like one of the biggest battleships. I think I call it the Iowa class. And it was the last one made during World War II. And it served all the way up to the Gulf War. One of the most interesting things on it was there was a display where they talked about the kamikaze that hit the Missouri. And there's actually a picture of the plane right before it hit. And to listen to these guys talk, they're like, you want to know what kind of damage the Missouri took after this plane hit them? Well, there's a 1 foot section of rail that's dented. That was it. Other than flaming wreckage across the thing, it didn't affect the ship a bit. Now, what caught my attention was, and when I was there the first time about 10, 12 years ago, they didn't have this display up. But apparently, in the interim, the family of the kamikaze pilot, and they found his body apparently in the aircraft wreckage, and gave him a burial at sea. When his family came, they brought pictures of him And there's a picture of him as a kid holding an airplane. And the family was very grateful for the reception that they received, because I don't think they were bringing the photographs, but they weren't quite sure how they would perceive, but they were warmly welcomed and they were deeply gratified to see that the U.S. Navy gave his body the traditional burial at sea, because up until then, the family really didn't know what had happened. So that was kind of a little heartwarming thing that wasn't on there. The Missouri, of course, was amazing because it's where World War II ended. There's an actual plaque in the deck. It says, over this spot on September 2nd, 1945, the instrument of formal surrender of Japan to the Allied powers was signed, thus bringing a close to the Second World War. That actual spot, there's pictures of it with the Japanese envoys, MacArthur. They have replicas of the actual signing papers, one of which, I guess, is in Tokyo. The other one, I believe, is in our National Archives. So that, as a history buff, just brought chills to me. The other things on the island, the USS Bowfin, one of the most prolific submarines in World War II. And then, of course, you have the USS Arizona Memorial, which is where I'm not even going to bother looking it up, but we all know that that's where a number of young sailors are entombed to this day. They died on the ship when it was exploded. A torpedo hit the forward magazine. I did ask the park ranger there. I said, how many survivors are left from the USS Arizona? And he said, there are only two sailors left. They're both on the mainland. Neither one of them will be interned with their brethren. So they'll never do another intern ceremony where they take the remains and place them inside the ship. So I thought that was kind of significant, because I know when I was there 10 years ago, the number was maybe 15, maybe as high as 20. So we went. There's a fourth thing there, the Pearl Harbor Aviation Museum, which I did not get to visit for the second time because we just ran out of time. Everything shuts down by 5 o'clock, and we got there pretty early. I did buy something there, though, that I thought was, I don't know what to make of this, tacky, or it's a Lego type mini building block set where you can build a USS Missouri, the USS Bowfin, a plane representing the Pearl Harbor Aviation Museum, and then the US Arizona Memorial, which in my brain is extremely tacky, but I bought it nevertheless. No idea what I'm going to do with it.
I don't see it as tacky, because there have always been sort of models of those that you could buy, and the Lego is just a different type of model.
Yeah, and this wasn't actually Lego, but it was Lego type.
Yeah.
The only other thing that gave me a chill was I went through the submarine museum. It's Pacific Ballistic, whatever it was. I turned the corner, and there was a MIRV, a mock-up of a MIRV. Do you know what a MIRV is, Corey?
I do not.
Multiple independent MIRV. Multiple independent. I used to know what it, I should know what this MIRV, but it was basically a mock-up of a Polaris submarine inside it with 5 mock-ups of the nuclear weapons that are currently, I believe, in our ballistic missile submarines at sea. And the thing was life-size, and it just chilled me to think that one of these things could potentially wipe out an entire city. And because there are multiple reentry vehicles, they're not like the old ones where they just drop and go. They basically, okay, you got 5 missiles, they're all coming down. Oh, this city's been blown up. Okay, let's retarget it to this city. Oh, this one's blown down. Let's retarget it to this city. So there's almost no way to defend against them. That was probably the closest I got to remembering what was going on in the world, because for the most part, I didn't watch any news or anything else. It was just really relaxing. not to make light of what's going on, but, you know, it was kind of nice just to be out of that. On the way after Pearl Harbor, I made a deal. I said, okay, they're going to let me stop at this comic store and pick up what I left behind. And I picked up five things. The first thing was a set called Axel Press Button from Eclipse Comics.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was. It's
from British Comics.
Yeah, and I have never read it. And I thought, you know what? They had it for $10. I looked at it the first time when I first started going through it, but I put it back. And then I picked up the Book of Lost Souls. This was a Marvel Icon imprint, J. Michael Straczynski, Colleen Dorn. All six issues, I don't remember if I read this. I must have, and I might end up finding it in my collection. I don't know. But what got me back, and what part of me, you know the old deal, Corey, if you don't buy it right away, you'll come back and
it'll
wish
be gone.
Yep. Yeah, they had, it was X-Men 92, number one variant edition, J. Scott Campbell doing Psylocke. They had the black and white edition, they had the color edition, and then they had one signed by Stan Lee. No certificate, but what the deal was is Stan came in and he doesn't really sign thing, but he did sign one of these, and this was 2016. Shortly afterwards, Stan stopped touring doing this stuff with Stan Lee Collectibles. And as we all know, he passed away, I believe, 2018. So this might possibly be one of the last things Stan Lee ever signed. I wanted it just because Stan Lee signed it. And when I look on the eBays, there's not many of these things left. So, you know, that was, well, let's just say I spent as much there as I spent on my wife's jewelry. That's all I'm going to say. So hopefully they're happy. But yeah, again, I'll just say the name one more time. Oh, hang on a second. I dropped the business card.
Oh,
Other
no.
Realms Limited, Hawaii. I didn't meet the owner, Charles Whitesell, but his employees were friendly, really cool. 1130 North Nimitz Highway, C-140, Honolulu. If you happen to be going there or you check them out and you find something you want to buy, you know, they're on the eBay or the Facebooks, www.other-realms.com. I mentioned that, that guy from Minnesota that bought that Stan Lee thing was raving about your shop. Why not? We just need the love. I did not buy the Fireball lay that I saw there, mainly because I was worried that TSA might take it from me when I left. We were there for St. Pat's Day. They had a mini St. Pat's Day parade, including the DeLorean from Back to the Future. We were very tempted to steal it and just go back and repeat the week over and over and over. We didn't. Oh, we behaved ourselves. Sort of. Well, mainly we walked, so we got the drink. But we didn't end up at Happy's. Hang on, that ain't it. I can let me find the picture of this while I gab. It was the one Irish pub that my buddy found. And oh, I was right. It was Happy's. Murphy Happy's Kelly O'Neill's. That's the name of it. And oddly enough, we ran into people from Minnesota there, which is great. They had signs there. You know, what I love is looking at the autograph pictures. They had one from Johnny Cash, you know, where he's doing the famous finger up. And then next to the kitchen was the gentleman who no soup for you. So he wrote Kelly O'Neill staff, no soup for you. And then he crossed off the no. So it's soup for you. And I can't think of the actor because I can't read the name of it. But you all know him, the soup Nazi. So that was a lot of fun. I know some of the guys wanted to go to more pubs, but I was like, guys, I drove the entire time for everybody on the island because, yeah, I may be a rider, but I'm a terrible passenger. So we declined to do that. We just went back to the hotel and drank. So that's all. I did find Pog Saltwater Taffy. So apparently they're branching off. You got to be careful of that. And that's pretty much it.
Hold on. Pog saltwater taffy. So were the slammers like great big pieces of saltwater taffy?
It could be. I didn't do it because my teeth are really bad. So I didn't have to. I didn't want to attempt it because, you know, when you're there, it's like I don't need emergency dental work while I'm there. I will give a shout out to the Waikiki Brewing Company, a great place for drinks and awesome food. Very friendly people. We did do some whale watching. And again, if you look at my Facebook page, I happen to actually catch some of the whales. I just aimed the camera and just started pressing it because I didn't want to. I tried to get the film going, but the whales come down around Hawaii because there's no predators. They can give birth to their young. They don't eat a lot, but eventually when they get the calves get of age, then they go up north Alaska way, and that's where they feed. So humpback whales. So Star Trek, I didn't have to worry about it yet because we the humpback whales were doing okay. See, the other place I'll shout out is we stopped at a place called K-Pop Donuts, where they deep fry their donuts every day and they fill them with stuff. And when you eat them, they have one called a volcano. And every time you eat into it, it pops. All the filling explodes. Very tasty. Like I said, we were there for a long time. The best thing we did, though, on Thursday, we just got to the point where we're like, okay, we're going to go here. We're going to go here. We're going to go there. And everybody just kind of went, screw it. We just rented an umbrella and we sat on the beach for like 4 hours. It was glorious. I got warm. I jumped in, went under in the Pacific Ocean, came back. So it was a lot of fun. Very relaxing, very expensive. Glad we did it. On the way back, again, Delta, I have nothing but praise for them. It was fantastic. It was an overnight flight, so they serve a meal right away, and then, you know, people go to sleep. What I watched on the way back was I wanted to watch Tora, Tora, Tora. Have you heard of this movie, Corey?
I have a VHS copy of that movie.
Does it have subtitles?
Yes.
The one that was on the Delta flight did not have subtitles, which was really weird because Tora, Tora, Tora is a film fairly historical based on the attack of Pearl Harbor. What's unique about it is that the part with the Japanese in it are all in the Japanese language, filmed with Japanese directors, producers, actors. So it's a Japanese production. The American side is the same. American actors and English, American directors, producers. And then they put the movie together. Now, I thought first it was that my seat was failing. I know on the way down, my wife's seat failed. And what they had to do was reboot it. And then it works fine. And, you know, it took a while to reboot, but, you know, you're on an 8-9 hour flight. What else are you going to do? And so I went to another movie. But what I noticed when I went to another movie up in the corner, oh, that's where the subtitles are. Pops down. You can change any subtitle you want. Went back to Tora, Tora, Tora. They didn't have that screen there. And there was no way I was going to watch a 2.5 hour movie where half of it was in Japanese and I didn't understand it, knowing that I could come home and watch it probably on whoever produced it. It's probably on TV even as I speak. So I watched something else. I watched The Suicide Squad. Second one that had John Cena and well, really, that's the only one I watched it for. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. I had to be careful because I was like ready to laugh out loud several times as I was coming through it. And it's a crazy movie. Again, I just watched to the end credit scenes to, you know, watch it to go into the next one. And I enjoyed it. And I will probably go watch the first one. Who's that? I can't think of his name. Merle on Walking Dead.
Oh, but, I know.
Yeah, he was in Guardians. It was so cool to see him right away in the beginning. And I thought, oh, this is cool. He didn't make it through the movie, but that's a different subject. So, and the flight was back. Since then, we'll talk about it when we get to Freaky. There is one movie I'll give a shout out because what we did a lot of times is usually by the weird thing about Waikiki is that everything seems to close down by 10, 10:30. Nothing's open 24/7. I'm like, really? even Key West is open. Well, yeah, they close their bars between 4 and 6. I don't know why. I remember they, when I go down there, every time they tell you, this is why we close the bars. It's not for cleaning. But we get back and we tore on a movie and Chris would fall asleep first and then I'd watch the movie. I mean, I started watching Back to the Future, but it was on TBS. So like every 5 minutes, there'd be 7 minutes of commercials. I'll watch one more. Okay, I'm done. And then I watched Fast Time from Ridgemont High, which I don't remember any of. It was like the first scene had Anthony Edwards on it, you know, from ER, Goose from. Yep. Yeah, he just appears. And then a very young Forrest Whitaker is there. I think he was in one called Summer School that Mark Hammond was in. He just shows up. He plays this guy. He shows up. So, the test said I failed. I think he's wrong. And he took the pee bottle, left. And he comes back at the end of the movie with the people. You were in wrestling the whole time? Yeah. So just funny, you know, the guy's a brilliant star now, but just to see these beginning things. And that's what's fun, especially watching these old movies, is catching all the young actors like that. But again, TBS, for every 5 minutes of show, you get 8 minutes of ads. So I watched enough of it and then turned it off. The one that we did watch all the way through, we turned on and what caught my attention was I noticed William Campbell. William Campbell, if you remember, was the guy from Star Trek. He played Trelane. He was, I believe, Kor on Trouble with Tribbles, the Klingon. And then he got to revive him on Deep Space Nine. But I saw him and I go, well, this is weird. And then, of course, there was a typical Nazi and he was punishing people. Then I suddenly realized, you know what? Mickey Rooney's in this thing. And other character actors would pop up that I couldn't place. So we just started watching it. And later I found out it was called The Secret Invasion, which was a 1964 American war film directed by Roger Corman. And it's one of the few he did. Again, very low budget, and you can tell it. It's kind of like the way you and I would film it, Corey. The guy throws a knife, and next thing you know, it's in your throat with, you know, syrup rolling down your throat. You don't see the knife going in, but it was very effective. And the battle scenes were pretty rough. I read a little bit about it on Facebook. It was actually, they filmed it in Yugoslavia at the time. Again, probably because Corman was notoriously cheap and had a good way of being able to stretch his dollars. But it was a surprisingly good movie. If you ever get a chance to see it, his big problem was Corman could not get enough military extras to, you know, film, because it was actually some type of emergency on the island and they had to go. And so it's you can tell it's cheap, certainly not like Saving Private Ryan, but damn, it was good. So check it out. It has a ring from kind of like the Dirty Dozen, which itself was, and this appeared 3 years before the Dirty Dozen. And I think that was from Last Samurai, wasn't it? So it's like they take the same themes and go forward. So that was kind of an unpleasant thing, or I should say a pleasant diversion. So, yeah, it was a good trip. I'll talk a little bit about more when we get to Freaking and Geeking. I had all sorts of things in the mail and eBays and, you know, we got other things to talk about. How is that? I didn't spend the whole episode talking.
Well, yeah, you did.
Yeah.
We got an email.
Ooh.
From our friend Travis.
Oh, yeah.
Saying that there is a comic book for the podcast. It should be a real comic, a comic magazine with real muscle, Iron Maidens, created by Rich Buckler. They defend crime, defend the weak, whether they're male or female, fight for truth, justice in the American way, and they don't like to lose. It lists here as being scripted by Monroe Arnold, the guy who writes Reagan's Raiders and Codename Ninja, illustrated by Mike McCarthy. I have a secret about this book.
Ooh, do tell.
Monroe Arnold was not going to be writing it.
Mm-hmm.
it was going to be me. This was back in the 80s when Rich Buckler put an ad in the Comic Buyer's Guide saying they were looking for writers for Soulsome Books. And I sent in a couple of scripts, and he wrote back and said, all right, you're hired. We're going to have you take over Reagan's Raiders with issue 6. We're doing a spinoff of Codename Ninja, which is going to be about a ninja who's there are two CIAs, one that's good and one that's bad. He's working for the good one, trying to fight the one that's bad. And we have this book about female bodybuilders who are private detectives called Iron Maidens. We want this book to have a decent mystery and to be about bodybuilding.
I think you were both in at the time, weren't you?
I knew nothing about bodybuilding at all.
Oh, that was later.
So what I did, I went and I bought an issue of Muscle and Fitness, put together a mystery, and sent in the plot. He approved it. I think I did like 8 or 9 comics I wrote. And they had to be full script because that was just how he asked me to do it. And then I sent him in and nothing and nothing and nothing.
Whole lot of nothing going on.
And finally I called his office and I kept getting, oh, I'll get back to you. And after about a month of him, oh, I'll get back to you, I called and I got, I'm not making this up either, the Consuela from Family Guy, a woman who, hello? No, Mr. Buckler not here anymore.
Anymore?
No, he not here. No, I can't take a message. No, no, goodbye, no. Don't call again, no.
Don't call again.
It was about a month later that they had in the Comic Buyer's Guide that Soulson had gone belly up.
I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
So, yes, I wrote the first 4 issues of Iron Maidens. I only remember that it was, I had to actually, I bought that magazine to learn about bodybuilding. And he also was going to do the comic digest size with only 3 panels a page. And I had to work in a bodybuilding scene in each issue. So I would do that, and I actually would put, you know, what their workout routine was. I knew nothing about weightlifting or bodybuilding, so I just cribbed it from the magazine. But I remember the mystery that they'd been hired for. It was kind of a person had been accused of murder who didn't do it, so his wife had hired them to find the real murderer. So I had fake clues and real clues and all that stuff. So now you don't need to worry about Rich Buckler getting a bunch of scripts and then taking off and going back to Marvel to draw Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. You have to worry about stuff on the internet messing up your computer, but we've got the solution, and that's our sponsor, NordVPN. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest, if you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger, all sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files. It backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/3ku, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1-month plan, a 2-year plan, a 1-year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. I don't know, Joe. Was that a good transition?
It would have caught me off guard.
You know, with all these podcasts I do, I should be good at transitions.
You should.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where I go back to sleep while he tells more stories about Hawaii. No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Well, I left the store running on manual. I did have a thing up saying I'd be gone, not to surprise anybody. And we had a few sales come in and out, which was kind of cool. A few of them I'll mention. I sold off a Lady Death, The Reckoning, number one, 25th anniversary premium foil edition that came out from Coffin in 2019. It was one of those that was really cool when I got it. But I'm like, you know what? I've got the original and I don't know. So it is gone. Corey, do you remember Dylan Dog from Dark Horse?
Yes, that is, I believe, a reprint of a, not a British comic, but a European comic.
Yeah, I think it was Italian, if I recall right, because it was part of, I'm trying to read. Oh, hey, I brought my readers with me today. So let's see if I can make tales of it. Bonatelli Books. I remember getting these in.
There has also been a movie of it.
And the one Dylan Dog, I believe, is, let's see, Nightmares Can't Hurt You. There's No Such Thing as the Walking Dead. Monsters are all in your imagination. We tell ourselves these things to make us feel safe, to give us strength against the unknown. But there are things in the dog that can hurt us. Just ask Dylan Dog. He's unlike any private eye you've ever met. Creatures are from beyond the unknown or after you. You can hire him. He might just save your life. And it was either, well, they say it will take to the silver screen. Brandon Routh from Superman, as Superman Returns, will be Dylan Dog, or is Dylan Dog. Is the movie out yet?
It came out. Let's see. It was called Dylan Dog, Dead of Night. Came out in 2011. Film received negative reviews from critics. Grossed just $5 million on a $20 million budget.
So it should be. It'll be good. Or maybe save it for Bad Movie Night. So when these books came out, Dark Horse had three different series. They were all smaller size, booklet size. And while I ordered five for the shelf, I never sold one off the shelf. I only sold pre-orders.
By the way, there were six issues, not three.
Well, I say that because right now they are silly, silly money if you can find them. because maybe because of the movie, maybe because you just can't find them. Nobody's got them out. So that was kind of cool. Sold a couple issues of that. Fathom the Core, I think, is the current series going on from Aspen. Sold a couple of the variant covers. Sold Lady Rawhide, a couple of the Joe Linsner black and white ones. This is from Dynamite. When they started publishing Lady Rawhide, I believe the first one were through Tops. And this is kind of around the time of Zorro. And, of course, she wears a hot leather outfit. She's got a whip. She's in All New Adventures. Joe Linsner drew the cover. What else you need to know? So sold a couple of those. Sold an issue of Henry number 2 from 1948. Henry was a comic strip, wasn't it, from Sunday Papers?
Yes.
Carl Anderson did it.
And I believe that's the one with the kid with the kind of the round head.
Yep.
Kind of a round head, and it's a pantomime strip. Henry never speaks.
They started it, and the comic was published. It looked like it was published yearly. 65 issues were done. Let's see, starting 1948, ending in 1961. Just finding any of them, good luck with that. They're not, they say the near mint price is not expensive, but I find that hard to believe. I sold one in good shape, and it went pretty well. Let's see, sold up Spider-Woman number 1, one of the Marvel Authentics. This was when Marvel had these special covers come up. Most of them were blank, but you could get ones that were signed by the artist. In this case, it was a Bart Sears, not only signed, but sketched version of it. He only did about 600 of them. And for some reason, I had a bunch of them for some reason, and they just ended up selling it. The last thing I sold while I was gone, and Kevin, if you're actually listening to this here podcast, I apologize you had to wait because you bought it right when I was leaving. Last Kiss number 4 from Shonda Press. Last Kiss is from John Lustig, and what he did is he bought a lot of the old romantic art from the 40s and 50s. Things from like Carlton's First Kiss number 9, things like that. And in 2001, he had 4 issues, including an ash can of this come out, where he actually took entire comic stories and rewrote them in just hilarious format. There was one in one of them where he talks and goes on and on about the woman just would not marry the man because he collected comic books. He currently does Last Kiss as a single strip comic, which you can catch online or on his Facebook page. He also has other people write it, like Tony Isabella's written a few, just hilarious stuff. And what's fun is he also takes not only the original art panel, but then he publishes the funny one, and then he'll publish the original art panel. And I know, Corey, you clench a lot because a lot of it was done by Vince Coletta Studio, but you got art from like Dick Giorgiano, Ernie Colon, Joe Stanton, Lou Zansky. You never know what will show up because, like I say, he just bought it and he kind of repurposes it for his own thing. All of it, it's mostly online now. Only 4 issues of the comic strip or the comic book, but it was pretty hilarious. Now, since then, I've gotten back on the horse. I made a bunch of offers to people that, if you're watching stuff, and I'm starting to put tons of stuff online as well. So if you know what to do, especially listeners of this here show, if you see something you're interested in, give me a quick note. It's easy if you do it through the eBay system, because then I can turn around and send you an offer. If you want to send me an offer, well, just like the one guy, he sent me an offer, said, hey, we take $14. And I said, no. I'm going to sell you 3 comics for $10. How dare you ask that you spend more with me, because you're a treasured listener of this here show. That's why I'm called Crazy. K-R-A-Y-Z. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show.
Toilet break.
No. Not where I turn off the podcast and start reading this Call the Conqueror and Call the Destroyer omnibus.
Destroy.
Did you know the first issue was drawn by Bernie Wrightson?
Really?
Ooh. No, it's Freaking and Geeking Joe. What are you freaking on?
I'm sad. I mean, I'm genuinely
sad. Should I play sad music?
You can, but there's nothing you can do about it. It's just things I got to get over with. The first thing that was weird... kind of a freaking, kind of a geeking. My box day showed up the Saturday I left. Or I should say, I left on Friday. It showed up Saturday. Fortunately, Holly was home and able to intercept it. But I didn't have a previews in it. So that means, Corey, as soon as you hear a previews is out, I'll have to go find one locally because I have no idea when I'm going to get my next box day. They are really out of sorts. Again, it's not Discount Comic Book's problem. You know, books are shipping wonky. They got weird weather. I'm sure they're still understaffed from COVID. You know, again, in Hawaii, we talked to a number of the servers. And that's the one travel hint I'll give you if you ever go somewhere, and especially when you go to a restaurant. Talk to the locals. They'll give you good ideas like, no, don't go here, go there. You know, like we said, don't go to Diamond Head. We walked this other trail, which was easier to walk. That's a great way to do it. But the other things that kind of freaked me out, pro wrestler Scott Hall passed away while I was in Hawaii. I didn't post much non-Hawaiian stuff while I was gone, other than Corey posting the podcast. But with Scott Hall, I almost had to, because I've been following Scott Hall since he was back in the AWA days. And you know, everybody's got a Scott Hall story. I mean, back then he was with Kurt Hennig and he was playing the kind of the Tom Selleck Magnum PI look. And then, of course, he went to WWF. And I don't think I was watching a lot as he debuted as Razor Ramon, but I was aware of what he was doing. And I always thought it was funny because he just talked like he was an American when he was in AWA. And now he's doing this, hey, yo, kind of a Chico thing with greased hair and the toothpick.
It was he was doing an impression of Al Pacino from Scarface, which Vince McMahon had never seen,
really?
And thought he had completely made up the entire persona and accent and everything.
Oh, that's brilliant. I cannot tell you how much my mind blew when the NWO started. Because I went and I rewatched it all on the YouTubes. Just the whole him showing up, because they're like, what is he doing here? I got someone I'm going to bring. You know, he started threatening, I'm going to bring somebody. And I'll never forget, well, who did you bring? He turns around and there's Kevin Nash. And the look on Kevin's face, his eyes like, ha-ha. And kudos to Eric Bischoff for taking a table. I remember watching that in the shop where – was it Nash or was it Scott Hall that powerbombed him through a table off the...
It was Kevin Nash.
Oh, my God. For Bischoff to do that. And Bischoff was the boss. And, of course, we were just enthralled. And did we watch it live when we found out Hogan was the third member? Because we were really big on watching pay-per-views. We were watching it live.
Because that was the Bash at the Beach pay-per-view.
Yep. And I mentioned a book I read previously, and I don't know where it went, the pro wrestling book, where he, never mind, it's buried somewhere, where they go back and they kind of cover everything, which was just a lot of fun. But I will give one shout out, as if he needs it, to DDP, because Scott Hall was really, really in bad shape. I did not realize, and I'll give another shout out to your boss, Mike Johnson on PW Insider, did a wonderful write-up of Scott Hall talking about just all the trauma Scott Hall went through as a youngster. I don't want to get into it here, but the fact that he made it as far as he did, but a lot of it was probably undiagnosed, which led to him drinking so heavily. And I remember the video when DDP went to go try to help Scott Hall, and Scott was in the wheelchair and his face was puffy and he's trying to still be the machismo man. And it was sad, but with DDP yoga, he helped Scott recover. He gave him more years. He was able to reconcile with his family. That's why I haven't started it. I know my daughters have taken it, but now that my hips are fixed, I'm going to actually start DDP yoga. But I dropped, I don't know what it was. I think it was $100 at the time. I gave him $100 just because of what he did with Scott Hall, helping Jake the Snake, helping countless of people and wrestlers and other people. And I've got it now. I finally got it back from my daughter. So I'm going to be starting that. Not that. Well, I think I need it. I just don't feel good. You know, I mean, my hips are fixed. I'm not in pain. But again, it was sad to see Scott Hall pass away. But I'm just to hear, know that DDP helped him, know that he reconciled with his family, made me feel a little bit better. Speaking of other pain, I'm fighting with my teeth. I think I've gone in about me getting crowns. Old fillings weaken my teeth. They're cracking. I had a dentist. I had to go in Wednesday. You know, 24 hours of landing, I'm in the dentist chair. Actually, it went pretty good. It was fairly painless. But I got to get a new crown. Now, the tooth hurts. It just aches. So they're trying to figure out, well, there's a crack in it, but is the tooth aching because of the crack or because you need the crown? So I got a temporary crown. 2 weeks from now, I'll go in. If the tooth continues to ache, the tooth's going to have to go bye-bye. If it stops aching, then they can put a permanent crown on it, and that should solve the problem. 2 days later, it's still aching, so I'm not happy about that. While we were in Hawaii, Holly and her boyfriend moved out. We knew it was coming. The quick story for those of you that to remember, to recap, this is like the little tiny, you know, if you recall, an issue, whatever. They got in a bad rental situation.
Previously. Crazy Comics and Stories.
Yeah, and this is like real previous. You know, they got in a bad rental situation. We told them not to sign anything. They moved in, which was just going to be a couple months, and then the pandemic hit. And he lost his job, and she lost his job. And I am grateful they were here. But now that things are better, knock on the side of my Comic Defense comic book box, they've decided to move out. They're not far away, close to their job. And Chris and I had gone through this before where, you know, the kids moved out, and you get that empty nest, and we're sad. And then about a week later, hey, the kids have moved out. We can do what we want. And so we're kind of going through that too. You know, we're still trying to get adjusted back from, you know, being in Hawaii. Because, I mean, what? We came back, it was 60, and then it went to 30, and then it rained, and then it snowed. And then I guess you guys had a snowstorm while I was gone. So what the hell did I got to complain about? Water is water. Who cares? So anyways, the kids are gone. You know, the uppers, we're trying to decide, well, what are we going to do? We got the upstairs now, most of the garage. The basement still looks like a whirlwind's gone through it. So we're having we're just kind of having that sad moment again, the empty nester thing. And we're trying to decide, are we going to stay or do we want to go into a condo? You know, selling a place now is easy. Getting a place is a little tougher because prices are just crazy. So that's pretty much it for me freaking. I got to go to work in a couple days. So I just got to get I'll save that for geeking. Corey, what are you freaking on?
I have a few things.
Do you got a lot of issues with us people?
No, that's oh, you that's save best it. Of us.
Yeah, you let it build up.
DC has released their stuff for the next previews. And once again, their prices are a bit higher. And I would say that inflation thing, but it's not because DC's been raising their prices on their hardcovers and trade paperbacks for the past few years. We talked in the last episode about how their reprint of 52 is going to be $175, highest price ever for an omnibus.
Come on, you can get the 200. Do it.
And I'm looking at the cost that they're having for their hardcovers and trade paperbacks, and it's so hard for me to believe that in the 90s and 2000s that they were number one by far at selling trade paperbacks and hardcovers. They owned that market. Matter of fact, a number of their Vertigo series were printed at a loss because they knew they would make it up in the bookstore market. Even Sandman did not sell well until it was in trade paperbacks. I think the highest selling issue of Sandman was number 50, which had the gold cover. Only sold 75,000 copies, and this was at a time when Spider-Man was selling 500,000 copies every month. So DC's further burying their collected editions by just stupid pricing. I don't get it. And I imagine that there's somebody at Discovery Warner going, well, why are your sales going down on this stuff? Well, because you're priced $10, $20. On your paperbacks, you're priced $5 to $10 above everybody else. For your hardcovers, you're $10 to $20 above everybody else. And now on your omnibuses, you're $25 to $50 above your competition. It's not going to be good because people are – and DC's had the problem before. That's how Marvel beat them in the 70s when DC was 25 cents and Marvel was 20 cents. Have not been watching a lot of news, but I did see that during the Supreme Court hearing, once again, politicians were holding up books and saying that, you know, this book is terrible and horrible. And, oh, my gosh, we have to stop books like this from being published. And whenever politicians go after books, you know they're going to be going after comic shops. You know they're going to be looking at the stuff that comic shops are doing. You know they're going to go after trade paperbacks and graphic novels and such, because it's not words on a page, it's pictures. And pictures are easier to demonize. As we learned with Mouse, they were able to say, "Ball, there's nudity in this." Well, yeah, because when people were put in the gas chambers, they were stripped. So once again, be active in protecting books. Join the ACLU. They protect the First Amendment. Give money to the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Let your local comic shop know that, you know, by your dollars that you support them and you support freedom of speech in their books. When a politician, especially the local politicians, are available for speaking, ask them if they are into banning books, because that's an important issue to you. And any politician who's running on banning books, you are not going to vote for. Let them know that if they're into banning books, you will not vote for them. And it doesn't matter if they're right or left. Let them know that. They need to know that this issue that they're pounding on is going to lose them votes. Because right now, there are politicians who are counting on, if they say they're going to ban books, they're going to win back the votes of the suburban moms and the people with kids in school. And if you're out there telling them, no, if you are going to be working on banning books, I'm voting for your opponent. I don't care who it is. It could be a squirrel, and I'd vote for your opponent because banning books is wrong. There's a new Morbius movie that's supposed to have been coming out for the last year or so. It's supposedly coming out next week. We'll see.
My wife said the previews looked interesting to her. So,
but there are people out there pissing and moaning because the lead actor said, oh, yeah, I haven't read a lot of the comics.
Sometimes that's better. When I was in South Pacific, ages ago, the director said, I don't want you to look at the movie. I want you to base the character on how you base it, not on what somebody else did.
Right. And you have to go by the script and not what you read in the comic. Because if you read the early Morbius comics, A lot of them aren't very good. They're overwrought. They're that Marvel style of characterization, which is endless belly aching. You should go by what's in the script. Why do I say that? Because Venom, movie Venom, which both of the movies, a lot of fun. Not much like the Venom in the comics at all. So can we please, 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 A, stop demanding that the people who are making movies of comics be, you know, full-blown nerds like me who know continuity backward, forward, and upside down, because no. And second, can we please stop judging these movies before they're out? Please? I know it's fun to do, because I did it with Titanic. When I heard Titanic, oh, they're making a movie about Titanic. It's $200 million. Well, we all know how it ends. I can't wait to see this. It's going to be a massive bomb. Boy, I was right about that, wasn't I? And I always go back to the Batman movie from 1989. Everybody, I can't tell you how many people came into Schindler's before the movie came out, whining and moaning and gnashing of teeth that Mr. Mom is going to be Batman and it's directed by the guy who did Pee-wee's Big Adventure. This is terrible. It's going to be worse than the TV show. Then a month after it comes out, they can't buy enough of the Batman t-shirts we have at Schindler's. There were the same people who were, this movie's going to be terrible, were the ones buying the movie adaptation, buying five or six Batman shirts, on and on and on. Wait till it's out. Wait till you see it and then decide. Or like me, like Batman. Am I going to see Batman? No, I don't want to go to a theater unless I absolutely have to, or the movie's going to be over the top, blow me away, and it's not going to be available on TV for a while because, hey, I could watch the Batman movie in about 2 weeks on my 55-inch TV with Dolby sound on my own speaker and not have to worry about the idiot texting two rows in front of me. I went to a Marvel virtual event. If you're a subscriber to Marvel Unlimited, they said, hey, we're having this big Spider-Man event. And what it was a broadcast of, they interviewed people who worked on Spider-Man. They had, you know, three different groups of four people, people who'd worked on Spider-Man in the past, people who've worked on Spider-Man editorially, and then people who are working on Spider-Man now. Really fun event. And in the event, they gave away an NFT. One of those non-fungible tokens, which is the latest internet scam to separate idiots from their money. So I put on Twitter that I sent a message to JMD Matias saying, boy, really liked listening to you talk about Spider-Man. Liked how you talked about how you could do serious and comedy with Spider-Man. Such a fun event. Thanks for doing it. I can't tell you how many emails, messages I got from crypto bros wanting to either sell me more NFTs or asking me for the code to get the NFT.
Could you help me for a minute?
Sure.
What the hell is an NFT?
All right. It's called a non-fungible token. What it is, you're buying a digital piece of art. And much like a crypto coin, there's a computer that will track who owns it. So only one person owns that piece of art, and it's tracked. So if I were to sell it to you, that would go all the way back to the initial computer and say, hey, by the way, this person now owns it. Now, yes, you could do a copy and save it yourself. But no, if you want to sell it, you have to go through all that. It's like Bitcoin and Dogecoin and all that stuff. And it's the biggest scam there is. But if you mention anything close to it on Twitter or Facebook, you will get inundated with tech bros who want to, you know, who want to talk to you about it. And it's almost like if you go to a sports bar and mention a sports team, and every guy in the bar, their eyes go up and they come over and they want to talk to you about their sports team. Last thing I am freaking on, I got a notice from DCB service that I had not gotten before, that for an omnibus they were allocated, did not get enough copies of an omnibus, the Called the Destroyer omnibus, and they would not be able to refill the orders because it was sold out at the distributor level. So we will circle back to that in a little bit.
Okay.
Joe, what are you geeking on?
One of my gentlemen artists I met online, Mark Lone.
Yes.
I sent him a request to do a Supergirl sketch for me. He was having some troubles, and I thought, you know what? Time to put our money where our mouth is. We're always telling, contact your favorite local guy, see if he'll do some work for you. And he hit this thing out of the park.
Yeah, that was just an amazing.
Amazing. And I, I'm looking at it now. I put it on Facebook, my Facebook feed, so hopefully you can find it. But if not, just go to Facebook and find him, Mark Lone. And matter of fact, as long as I'm on Facebook, let me just do that, because I know he's got a store you can also check out where he sells different prints and art. And I say that because Holly saw this artwork. Again, she secured it for me, so I didn't have to worry about losing it. So, and his store is one word, markloneart.bigcartel.com. And Holly sent me a note saying, you know, Dad, maybe for a housewarming gift, you could get me this. So I went and did it. So hopefully he gets that. But I'm just looking at this artwork, and it's just freaking amazing. And it got me thinking, a lot of times when I get art like this, I always compare it to like when I get an artist who's established. And you can usually get an artist who, for lack of a better term, is hungry to do some really killer art for you versus someone who might have tons of commissions coming in or is actually working hard in the actual comic industry. I'm not saying you can't get art from them, and you can get some really incredible art from them. But if you really want to get some killer stuff, what was the name of the lady who did the Supergirl art for me at a con a couple?
Jessica Hickman, who will be at the upcoming con.
Yep.
I love her stuff. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Love her
she
stuff.
Did me a cover that was amazing, and I think it was because I became aware of her through you, Corey. So, speaking of up and coming,
I sent you over to her table, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And she, and again, all this stuff, I don't have Mark's picture up. You can go to my Facebook feed, everything's public. Go down, you'll see Mark, you'll see the link to his site. The other stuff is in my Supergirl gallery, stuff that I have, and I've got some more pieces to put in there, so I got some updating to do. Speaking of, the return of MicroCon is coming up. Write this down. May 14th, 2022, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Mermaid Entertainment and Events Center in the Atlantis Event Room, or as I say, follow the signs around the building. It's $5 to get in. 9 and under are free. All the tables are sold out. I'm going to try to catch up with Kelly soon, see which artists are coming, so maybe I can plan for some more original art coming up. So that should be pretty cool. Speaking of other artists, there is no way on God's earth I will ever be able to afford a big-size Craig Horn art piece. I actually have a trading card that I won off of eBay, so you know I do have something representing him. I did the next best thing. I went to greghornart.com and I picked up the Bird City Comics exclusive of She-Hulk 1, where he based it after Dale Keown. Remember the famous cover where Hulk is like, "Arr!" and then they did a negative cover of it. Well, they did the exact same thing with She-Hulk, and he autographed it. And it comes with certificate of authenticity and all that fun stuff. So now I got a couple Greg Horn autographs, as well as Stan's autograph. Well, two Stans. And so my autograph hunt continues. Corey, let's see if you can guess which graphic novel I bought at Target. I'll give you one hint. It was not Alicia Keys' Girl on Fire, which I know I got noticed from because it was a big thing where I'm Alicia Keys. I'm just walking, looking at the toys. And this is my graphic novel. You're what? And I wandered over to a big ad advertising that you can from Target get Girl on Fire. And this is basically, I'm pretty sure we must have talked about it on one of our previous things, because this is the type of thing I'd point out. Because although I'm not an Alicia Keys fan, I enjoy her music. It's not something, if you're her fan, you definitely probably want to check this out, because it's a graphic novel, young adult graphic novel, about a girl who's aflame. It's the first ever graphic novel from Alicia Keys, co-written by Andrew Weiner and illustrated by Brittany Williams. You can go to Target and get it. You can, if I'll tell you this as a hint, if you want an autographed hardcover bookplate edition, go to premiercollectibles.com. They still have a few. Ridiculously cheap, because they did one of those live signings, and they had her sign some extra books. And as far as I can tell, they're still in stock. So that's my hint for the day for you. But no, Corey, it was not Alicia Keys' Girl on Fire, which was on the shelf. It was something else, something that I said I've been wanting to buy, but have yet to see in an actual comic store. It's from DC.
Is it that Teen Titans, the three books about Beast Boy and Raven?
Not the three books, but it is the one about Beast Boy loves Raven, the third one. And I know I got the other two I can pick up. But yeah, they had it there. 20% off, another 5% off because I have a Target Red card. And I was like, you know what? I might as well pick it up from Target since I... You know, and again, I might hit, a local comic store may have it, but the ones I hit did not. So again, you might be missing out. Again, I know when I used to have my store, I would go to like Toys R Us or Target or wherever, and I'd see, oh, jeez, they got the same stuff I do. You know, and especially when you're talking about, at the time it was Toy Biz Marvel toys. If I could get them first, I could sell a ton of them. If I got them after, well, I bought them at the same price Toys R Us sold them at. However, I also sold collectibles after they were gone from the shelf. So I had like both ways. But I understand, you know, you'd go in, and if I was a retailer, I go, oh, they got Beast Boy, but Raven, they're selling it below what I could get it at. Why bother? So I get it. I'm not totally oblivious. But I did buy a graphic novel from Target. And again, if you want Alicia Keys, I'm sure you could go there and get it too. Watching other things, I did mention, Corey, you ever watched the movie Time Bandits?
I have that movie as a Criterion disc.
And that was the disc they ran on the Delta flight. I almost said Northwest. That's how old I've been at the airport. I watched that because that was the other one. I mean, I actually bought a DVD of it like for $3 somewhere because they're like, oh, I don't have it. Let's watch it. And then it was like, well, it happens to be there. Let's just watch it because I still had like 6 hours of my flight to go through. Ridiculous fun, you know, just a lot of fun. When I did get home, while my wife went to go see Elton John in his Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, the final tour, I think that's what it's called.
It's the farewell tour.
Yep. I watched the last episode of Picard and I am loving it. I dislike that every single episode is going to end on a cliffhanger, but that's the nature of the beast. I did, while she was still gone, catch up on a couple. I'm on season two, so I'm way behind of Discovery. And Discovery strikes me more of they were trying to do the traditional Star Trek with an ongoing theme going through it. And as I watch it and I'm putting two and two together, I'm starting to think, I wonder if I'm going to guess right. And I know previously I hadn't, so I got that going for me, which is nice. And finally, just in times, you can go out and get Lucky Charms, just the marshmallow. So if you got time and you find them, you can enjoy just the marshmallows.
If you go to Amazon, you can order a 5-pound bag of cereal marshmallows.
I know we found that once when we went to the world's largest candy store down in Jordan. Because I remember buying that for my nephew as a gift. Because he always said, oh, I'd buy a box of that. And he didn't. He had no idea they made them. So that was quite a gift. So the last thing I'm geeking on is, you know, I was talking. I'm just sad. Just trying to get back. A lot of changes. You know, my wife is retiring. So she's trying to get that going. And I'm just trying to get back into the swing of things. And, you know, just some of it, I sit my ass down, do eBay. I went out, took a walk, tried to get my exercise going. So, you know, slow but steady, just trying to get back to where I was. So I got that going for me.
Which is nice.
Corey, how about yourself? You're circling back to something. What are you geeking on?
Let's go back to the fact that DCB Service said I wasn't going to be getting the Call to Destroyer Omnibus.
No call for you.
So they gave me the money as a credit, and I looked on eBay, and everybody was not on eBay. I looked on Amazon, and pretty much everybody was selling it at the $125 price point, or they would lower it below that, but then the shipping and handling would bring it up to that price. But I go over to eBay, and somebody says, oh, I have a damaged copy, and they were selling it for $50. And the damage is just that it got bumped. So there's it's not in mint, but it doesn't affect anything. So I put in a bid. And this was one where, you know, he was starting at $50, but, you know, the auction goes for this amount of time. Put in my bid. I said, yeah, $50 is good enough. If I don't get it for that, you know, I'll just find it somewhere. I'm sure there's a website that has it. Nope, I won.
Cool.
It showed up on Tuesday. The art in this. Now, I had not read a lot of Cull. Because Cull the Destroyer, the color comic was pretty much done by the time I was starting to read Marvel. They did a few other comics after that. That were direct market only or specials. I have those. And I also, so I bought that omnibus. And then I bought the omnibus that reprints all the black and white stuff. But this is the first 70 series. So as I said earlier, your first story, Bernie Wrightson. Your second story, Ross Andrew, inked by Wally Wood. The next batch of stories, drawn by Marie and John Severin. They don't say who penciled and who inked, but looking at it, it's real clear that Marie penciled it and John inked it. And then the next one, John and Marie Severin, really clear that John penciled it and Marie inked it. And, the art in this is just beautiful. Just beautiful stuff. Really looking forward to reading this book. You know, here's another one, drawn, penciled and inked by Michael Ploog. And there's that splash page, and that's just, this is some beautiful, beautiful art. Mike Ploog, inked by Al Milgram, back before Al Milgram was the guy who, well, get it done fast, we got to have it by Monday. That's an argument Butch and I constantly have. Al Milgram, because he was an editor at Marvel, they would give him the jobs that were unbelievably late. So that's why his stuff didn't look as good once he became an editor. Speaking of Al Milgram as an editor, I've told the story a bunch of times where in the 70s, Batman Family was way outselling Detective Comics. Detective Comics sales had slipped under the cancellation line. So they canceled Detective Comics. But then later in that week, Al Milgram, who was the editor, said, I got a better idea. Why don't we keep Detective Comics And because Batman Family is selling so well, we'll turn Batman Family into Detective Comics. So if you look at Detective Comics 480, you'll see across the top in real small print, Detective Comics featuring the Batman Family. Now, I had not read any of these. The first issue was drawn by Marshall Rogers. That was the main Batman story. And there's a Don Heck story and stuff like that. The second issue, you get the only Batman story I think I've ever seen drawn by P. Craig Russell. So it's like I'm finding all these beautiful Batman stories that I'd never even heard of. The stories themselves are kind of mediocre, but the art, the Marshall Rogers story, just as good as the stuff he did with Steve Englehart on their classic run. And the P. Craig Russell, it's real early in his career, but you can see the P. Craig Russell underneath the heavy-handed inks. And I'm just looking forward to, all right, who's going to be next in this? Because it's kind of this cornucopia of, wow, this is some amazing stuff. And I always love when I find kind of hidden gems like that, because it was a time when Batman wasn't selling. Nobody talks about 70s Batman anymore but me, unless it's the Neil Adams stuff. But really, the Batman in the 70s, I like so much better than the current godlike Batman. You know, amazing to read a Batman story where he gets punched and it hurts him. Or he gets knocked out. Or a criminal takes advantage of him, and it's not, I'm able to beat you 15 ways before even opening my eyes, where he's kind of just a guy. I also picked up on one of our runs around all over the place, the two Captain Universe trades. And the first one is the original Captain Universe stories that Bill Mantlo did with Steve Ditko. And Ditko inked most of them. Now, here's the thing. When I read these stories, I remember liking them at the time because, oh, I liked Captain Universe from the Micronaut stories. And these are like little individual stories for that, you know, done in one, which back in the 70s, when I was a kid, it's like, oh, it's a complete story in one issue. I don't have to worry about whether I'll get the next issue or not. There were times I would go to the grocery store and I had a certain amount of money for comics, and I would just go to the back, not to spoil it, but okay, is this continued or not? Because if it's continued, I'm not going to buy it. I like these Captain Universe stories. You can tell Steve Ditko's having fun. By the way, in one of them, Peter Parker and J. Jonah Jameson appear. Ditko doesn't draw them, though. He draws a window. Basically, he draws the outside of the Daily Bugle office, and there's a word balloon for Peter Parker and J. Jonah Jameson. But you can say he drew Spider-Man after the 60s. If you wanted to. But, oh, these stories are for kids. I'm reading it going, wow, Bill Mantlo is writing this for small children. And the more by the time I got to the third or fourth issue, it's like, this is pretty much them so that they could take it into like Ruby Spears or Hanna-Barbera and go, here you go. Here's a character. Here's your next cartoon show. Never got picked up, but it's a nostalgia pop for me. Also, with that Cull omnibus, I got a reprinted omnibus that I couldn't afford when it first came out. Let me pull it up here. Fantastic Four by Jonathan Hickman, Volume 1. Now, yes, I've read all these stories before, but I love Jonathan Hickman's run on every Marvel book. But his Fantastic Four run was really special in that when, as you're reading it, you're like, oh, this is a fun adventure story. But then when you kind of put it together, and then you read his Avengers into Secret Wars, and you remember the stuff he did in his Ultimate Universe stuff and Secret Warriors, he had these plot threads that just continued through all of those books leading up to Secret Wars. There are things that he dropped in his run on the Ultimates that pay off in Fantastic Four, that pay off in Secret Wars. I'm really looking forward to reliving this again, and I really hope Marvel reprints Secret Warriors, because that's the only one of Hickman's big stories that I don't have as an omnibus, and I'd just like to put them on the shelf with, okay, here's the two Ultimate stories, here's the Secret Warriors, here's his run on the Fantastic Four, here's the two Avengers omnibuses with Infinity in between them, here's Secret Wars, and then the X-Men are going to be on a separate shelf because it's Secret Wars was kind of the culmination of everything he had done. Last, I talked a little about it under Freaking, Marvel had a Spider-Man event. If you were a subscriber to Marvel Unlimited, you got an email letting you know that, hey, we're going to have a special 60th anniversary event. And what it was an online, basically it was a video, and it was divided into three parts. And the first part was three of the people who'd used to work on Spider-Man back in the 90s, and then in the second part, it was people who'd worked on Spider-Man in editorial. And then the third part was the people who are working on Spider-Man now, except for Dan Slott, who's not working on Spider-Man now, but they had him in there too. And one of the things they said is they're going to do more of these that are just for the people who subscribe to Marvel Unlimited. So if you are a subscriber to Marvel Unlimited, look in your email for those, because they're really fun interviews with comic creators. By the time this drops, it will be over, but 2000 AD is doing an online convention this weekend that I'm going to be watching the videos for. Same with the San Diego Comic-Con. When it was virtual, they left all the videos up on YouTube. So if you want to watch any of the panels from the last 2 years of San Diego Comic-Con, they're there. I believe they are not doing that in the future, which is a damn shame. It's a damn shame, because this is great information that should be more than just for the people who show up there, like the Kirby panels that Mark Evanier does. I want there to be video of those going forward for the rest of our lives, because it's going to be stuff that people are going to want to see 2, 3, 5, 10, 20 years from now. And the more that comic companies and convention organizers can do to put these panels up online, I am so happy about. Also, lastly, I guess, when this episode drops, I'm taking 3 days off.
Slacker!
Because it's WrestleMania week, and I will be covering wrestling shows all day Thursday and all day Friday.
Well, it's not really a day off then, is it?
No, it's not. So head on over to pwinsider.com, and you can read my coverage of some GCW events. Booker T has two wrestling events he's doing. I'm doing coverage of the WWE Hall of Fame, doing coverage of a New Japan show, and whatever else isn't covered, they'll probably throw my way. But I'm looking at it, and I think I only have one show that might be a deathmatch show. Whereas last year, every show I covered was a deathmatch show, and I hated all of them. So believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about Hawaii for an hour and a half.
Good for you.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
Did you hear about the chef who died? He passed away. We can only do so much. His legacy will become a pizza history. He ran out of time. And normally I would say hit my music, but I did want to say there was the next plan for our group is to go to Ireland. And while I'm kind of interested in going, what really got me going, they've got 5 comic shops in Ireland. 6 if I count the one near the border of inside of Northern Ireland. So I got that going for me, which is nice. And you got this going for you. Hit my music. Funk is on a roll.
Done, bitches!